You fixed your vacuum cleaner when you threw, when it broke. Will I be getting a bill for this? Mom asks. My mouth falls open. Are you kidding? He did that to be nice. Because he's a good person, and I asked him. He doesn't want your money. Mom tilts her head, studying me. Are you seeing this boy? The words that spill out are braver than I am, but not quite brave enough. We're friends, Mom, I say. I'm 17. I get to pick my own friends. This is the kind of argument Tracy, not me, has with Mom. When I used to listen to them fight, all I wanted was for my sister to be quiet. Now I understand why she couldn't be. I don't believe this. Mom reaches under the kitchen sink, pulling out a can of Ajax and sprinkling it on the spotless countertop. Your friends? Exactly what does that mean? Well, we've bought some condoms, Mom, and sometime soon. For a moment, I want to say it so badly, I'm afraid it'll just tumble out. It means I like him. He likes me. We like spending time together. Doing what? Mom lifts the carafe of lemonade and wipes away the circle of condensation beneath it. You never asked Tracy that about Flip. I've always assumed that was because she didn't want to know the answer. But now she says, in the same tone in which one would say, we hold these truths to be self-evident, Flip's from a good, responsible family. So's Jace. Mom sighs and walks over to the side window that overlooks the Garrett's lawn. Look. Duff and Harry are evidently fighting. Duff's waving a toy lightsaber menacingly at his younger brother, who, as we watch, picks up a plastic bucket and throws it at him. George is sitting on the steps sucking on a popsicle, without pants. Mrs. Garrett's feeding Patsy, holding out a book she must be reading aloud. Jace has the hood of the Mustang up, tinkering away. So what? I say. He has a big family. Why is this such an issue for you? Why does it matter to you? Mom is shaking her head slowly, watching them the way she always does. Your father came from a family just like that. Did you know that? He did. That's right. I think of the pictures, crowded with people, in that box Tracy and I opened so long ago. Were those his family? I'm torn between grabbing onto this scrap of information with both hands and concentrating on what's happening now. Just like that, Mom repeats. Big and messy and completely irresponsible. And look how your father turned out. I want to point out that I don't actually know how my father turned out. But then, he left us. So I guess I do. That's Dad's family, not Jace's. Same thing, she says. We're talking about a sense of accountability here. Are we? That doesn't feel like what we're talking about. What's your point, Mom? Her face freezes, only her lashes fluttering, as I've seen happen during difficult debates. I can sense her struggling to contain her temper, summon tactful words. Samantha, one thing you've always been good at is making choices. Your sister would jump in with her eyes shut, but you would think, even when you were very little. Smart choices, smart friends. You had Nan, Tracy had that awful Emma with the nose ring, and Darby. Remember Darby? With the boyfriend and the hair? I know that's why Tracy got into all that trouble in middle school. The wrong people can lead you to make the wrong decisions. Did Dad? I start, but she cuts in. I don't want you seeing this Garrett boy. I won't let her do this. Take away Jace like he's an obstacle in her path, or mine. Like the way she'll sometimes just throw out clothes I've bought if she doesn't like them. Like the way she made me quit swim team. Mom, you can't just say that. We haven't done anything wrong. I rode on a motorcycle with him. We're friends. I'm 17. She pinches the bridge of her nose. I'm not comfortable with this, Samantha. What if I'm not comfortable with Clay Tucker? Because I'm not. Are you going to stop seeing him? Stop having him? I make air quotes, something I despise. Advise you on the campaign? It's a completely different and a separate situation, Mom says stiffly. We are adults who know how to be responsible for consequences. You're a child, involved with someone I don't know and have no reason to trust. I trust him. My voice is rising. Shouldn't that be enough? Me being the responsible one who makes smart choices and all? Mom pours soap into the blender I'd left in the sink, sprays water into it, then scrubs furiously. I don't like your tone, Samantha. When you talk like this, I don't know who you are. This makes me furious. And then, in the next second, exhausted. Whoever I am scares me a little. I've never talked to my mother like this, and it's not the chill of the central air conditioning that prickles the skin of my arms. But as I see Mom cast yet another of a decade's worth of critical looks over at the Garretts in their yard, I know where I'm going. I walk to the side door and bend to put on my flip-flops. Mom's right behind me. You're walking away? We haven't resolved this. You can't leave. I'll be right back, I toss over my shoulder. Then I march across the porch, around the fence, and up the driveway to put my hand on the warm skin of Jace's back, bent over the innards of the Mustang. He turns his head to smile at me, quickly wiping his forehead with his wrist.
Sam,
you look hot, I say. He shoots a quick glance over at his mother, still reading to George and feeding Patsy. Duff and Harry have evidently taken their fight elsewhere.
Thanks.
He sounds bemused. Come with me, to my house.
I should probably take a shower or get a shirt.
I'm pulling at his hand now, slippery with sweat and grease. You're fine the way you are. Come on. Jace looks at me for a moment, then follows.
Should I have gotten my toolkit?
He asks mildly as I tow him up the steps. Nothing needs fixing. Not like that. I can hear from outside that Mom's got the vacuum cleaner back on. I open the door and gesture inside. Jace, eyebrows raised, steps in. Mom! I call. She straightens up from vacuuming one of the sofa cushions, then just stands there, looking back and forth between us. I walk over and flip the vacuum off. This is Jace Garrett, Mom, one of your constituents. He's thirsty, and he'd love some of your lemonade. Chapter 31. So now you've met my mother, I say to Jace that night, leaning back on the roof.
I sure have. That was awesome and completely uncomfortable.
The lemonade made it all worthwhile, though, right?
The lemonade was fine, Jace says. It was the girl who made it awesome.
I sit up, edge over close to my window and push it open, slipping one leg in, then the next, turning back to Jace. Come on. His smile flashes in the gathering dark as his eyebrows lift, but he climbs carefully in as I lock my bedroom door. Be still, I tell him. Now I'm going to learn all about you. A while later, Jace is lying on his back on my bed, wearing shorts but nothing else, and I'm kneeling beside him.
I think you already know me pretty well.
He reaches out to tug the elastic out of my hair so it falls free, draping over his chest. Nope, lots to learn. Do you have freckles, a birthmark, scars? I'm going to find them all. I lean down to touch my lips to his belly button. There, you have an innie. I'm filing this information away. Jace sucks in a breath.
I'm not sure I can be still. Jesus, Samantha.
Look, and over here. I lick in a line down from his navel. You do have a scar. Do you remember where you got this one?
Samantha, I can't even remember my name when you're doing this. But don't stop. I love the way your hair feels like that.
I shake my head, making my hair fan out more. I am wondering where this take-charge confidence is coming from. But at the moment, who cares? Watching what it does to him takes away my hesitation, any embarrassment. I don't think I'm going to get the whole picture with these here. I reach for the top of his shorts. His lashes flutter closed as he takes another deep, rough breath. I slowly slide them down, tugging over his lean hips. Boxers. Plain. No cartoon characters, I figured.
Samantha, let me look at you too. Please.
What is it you want to see?
I'm preoccupied by edging the shorts all the way off, and a little bit using this as an excuse, because my bravado has wavered after seeing Jace in only boxers, and not exactly immune to me. Okay, I know about arousal. I do. It was pretty much Charlie's perpetual state. Michael suffered over his, but that never stopped him from pulling my hand to his crotch. But this is Jace, and that I can do that to him, with him, makes my mouth go dry, and other parts of me ache in a completely unaccustomed way. He reaches up, brushing my hair away from the back of my dress so he can find the zipper. His eyes are still closed, but as the zipper slides down, he opens them, and they're brilliant green, like leaves when they first show up in the spring. He smooths the tips of his fingers around my shoulders, and then eases the dress down, taking my hands to pull them out of the armholes. I shiver. I'm not cold, though. I wish I had some exotic underwear. It's an ordinary tan bra I'm wearing, the kind with that little meaningless bow in the center. But just as I find Jace's plain boxers perfectly compelling, he seems mesmerized by my utilitarian bra. His thumbs brush over the front of it, tracing the outline, circling. My turn to take a deep breath now, except that I can't seem to, as his hands return to my back, searching for the clasp. I look down. Ah, you do have a birthmark. I touch his thigh. Right up here. It looks like a fingerprint almost. The tip of my index finger covers it completely. Jay slides my bra off, whispering, "You have the softest skin. Come close." I lie on top of him, skin to skin. He's tall, I'm not, but when we lie like this, we fit together. All the curves of my body relax into the strength of his. When people talk about sex, it sounds so technical, or scarily out of control. Nothing like this sense of rightness, of being made to fit together. But we don't carry it any further than lying together. I can feel Jace's heart thudding beneath me, and the way he curves away a little, embarrassed probably that his need shows more clearly than mine. So I just stroke his cheek and say, "Yes," I say, the girl who has always guarded her heart. I say for the first time, "I love you. It's okay." Jace looks straight into my eyes. "Yeah," he whispers. "It is, isn't it? I love you too, my Sam." For the next few days after our blow-up over Jace, Mom works her way through A, the silent treatment, with its accompaniment of sighs, frosty glances, and hostile muttering under her breath, then B, interrogating me about my plans for every hour of the day, and C, laying down rules. "That boy is not to be coming in here while I'm at work, young lady. I know what happens when two teenagers are alone, and that's not happening under my roof." I manage not to snap back that in that case, we'll find a handy back seat or a cheap motel. Jace and I are getting closer and closer. I'm hooked on the smell of his skin. I'm interested in every detail of his day. The way he analyzes customers and suppliers, summing them up so concisely but emphatically. I'm captivated by the way he looks at me with a bemused smile while I talk, as though he's both listening to my voice and absorbing the rest of me. I'm pleased by all the parts of him I know, and each new part I discover is like a present. Is this how Mom feels? Does every bit of clay feel like it was designed specifically to make her happy? The idea kind of grosses me out, but if she feels that way, what kind of person am I that I just don't like him being around?
"You're gonna have to handle this one for me, kid," Tim says, coming into the kitchen, where I am easing warmed focaccia squares out of the oven, sprinkling them with pre-grated parmesan. "They need more wine out there, and it's not a real great idea to ask me to be the sommelier. Gracie said 2 bottles of the Pinot Grigio."
His voice is teasing, but he's sweating a little, and probably not from the heat. "Why did they ask you? I thought you were here to be office support, not waitstaff." Mom is having 12 donors over for dinner. It's catered, but she's concealing the fact from the donors,
having me carry out the pre-cooked, reheated food.
The lines get kind of blurred sometimes. You have no idea how many coffee and donut runs I've made since I signed on to your ma's campaign. Do you know how to open those?
He nods at the two bottles I've extracted from the lower rack of the fridge. I think I can figure it out.
I hate wine, Tim says meditatively. Never liked the smell of it, if you can believe that. Now I could just chug both of those in 2 seconds flat.
He shuts his eyes. I've peeled off the metal coating on top and am inserting the corkscrew, a fancy new one that looks more like a pepper grinder. Sorry, Tim. If you want to go back out there, I'll bring these out.
Nah, the pretentiousness is getting a little thick, not to mention the bigotry. That Lamont guy is a supersized douchebag.
I agree. Steve Lamont is a tax attorney from town and the poster child for political incorrectness. Mom's never liked him since he's also sexist and fond of joking about wearing black every year on the anniversary of the day when women got the vote. I don't understand why he's even here, I say. Clay's from the South, but he's not a bigot, I don't think. But Mr. Lamont...
is fucking rich, babe. Or as Clay would put it, he's so loaded he buys a new boat every time the old one gets wet. That's all that matters. They put up with a hell of a lot worse to get some of that.
I shudder, jerking the cork, which breaks. Oh, damn. Tim reaches for the bottle, but I move it away from him. It's okay. I'll just try to get the broken bit.
Timothy, what's taking so long?
Mom marches through the swinging kitchen door, glancing between us. I hold out the bottle.
Oh, honestly, she says, that's going to ruin the whole bottle if any cork gets in.
She pulls it from my hands, frowns at it, then drops it into the trash and opens the refrigerator to get another. I start to take it from her hands, but she picks up the opener and twists it herself deftly, then does the same to the second bottle. Then she hands one to Tim.
Just go around the table and top off people's glasses.
He sighs.
Okay, Gracie.
She removes a wine glass from the dish rack and fills it, then takes a deep swallow.
Remember that you are not to call me that in public, Tim.
Right, Senator.
Tim's holding the bottle out in front of him as though it might explode. Mom takes another sip.
This is very good, she tells us absently. I think it's going really well out there, don't you?
She directs this question at Tim, who nods.
You can practically hear the purse strings loosening, he says.
If his voice is slightly sardonic, Mom doesn't pick up on that.
Well, we won't know until the checks come in.
She finishes the glass of wine in one last swallow, then looks over at me.
Do I have any lipstick left?
Just a rim, I say. Most of it is on the glass. She blows an impatient breath.
I'll run upstairs and reapply. Tim, get out there and fill him up. Samantha, the focaccia is getting cold. Bring it out with some more olive oil for dipping.
Whirling, she heads up the stairs. I take the wine out of Tim's hand, replacing it with the bottle of oil.
Thanks, kid. This isn't nearly as tempting.
I look over at the glass with its blush pink stain. She kind of knocked that back. He shrugs.
Your ma doesn't like asking folks for shit. Not really your style. Dutch courage, I guess.
Chapter 32.
You're not gonna believe what just happened to me,
Jace says the minute I flip my cell open, taking advantage of break at the BNT. I turn away from the picture window just in case Mr. Lennox, disregarding the break sign, will come dashing out to slap me with my first ever demerit. Try me. His voice lowers.
You know how I put that lock on the door of my room? Well, Dad noticed it, apparently. So today I'm stalking the lawn section, and he comes up and asks why it's there.
Uh-oh. I catch the attention of a kid sneaking into the hot tub. There's a strict no one under 16 policy, and shake my head sternly. He slinks away. Must be my impressive uniform.
So, I say I need privacy sometimes, and sometimes you and I are hanging out, and we don't want to be interrupted 10 million times.
Good answer.
Right. I think this is going to be the end of it. But then he tells me he needs me in the back room,
to have a talk.
Uh-oh, again.
Jace starts to laugh. I follow him back, and he sits me down and asks if I'm being responsible. With you.
Moving back into the shade of the bushes, I turn even farther away from the possible gaze of Mr. Lennox.
Oh, God.
I say, yeah, we've got it handled, it's fine. But seriously, I can't believe he's asking me this. I mean, Samantha, Jesus, my parents? Hard not to know the facts of life and all in this house. So I tell him that we're moving slowly and...
You told him that? God, Jace, how am I ever going to look Mr. Garrett in the eye again? Help.
He's my dad, Samantha. Yeah. Not that I didn't want to exit the conversation right away, but still.
So what happened then?
Well, I reminded him they'd covered that really thoroughly in school, not to mention at home, and we weren't irresponsible people.
I close my eyes, trying to imagine having this conversation with my mother. Inconceivable. No pun intended.
So then, he goes on about...
Jace's voice drops even lower.
Being considerate and, mutual pleasure.
Oh my God, I would have died. What did you say? I ask, wanting to know, even while I'm completely distracted by the thought. Mutual pleasure, huh? What do I know about giving that? What if shoplifting Lindy had tricks up her sleeve I know nothing about? It's not like I can ask Mom. State Senator suffers heart attack during conversation with daughter.
I said, yes, sir, a lot. And he went on, and all I could think of was that any minute Tim was going to come in and hear my dad saying things like, your mom and I find that blah, blah, blah.
I can't stop laughing. He didn't. He did not mention your mother.
I know.
Jace is laughing, too.
I mean, you know how close I am to my parents, but... Jesus. So, what do you think?
Jace asks, picking up two cans of paint from the floor and setting them on the counter. He pops one lid open, then the other, dipping in the flat wooden stirrer, swirling the paint around.
For the Mustang, we've got your plain racing green.
He slides the stick along a piece of newspaper.
Then your slightly sparkly one.
Another slide.
Which would you choose?
They're barely different. Still, I scrutinize both sticks carefully. What was the original paint job on the Mustang? I ask.
The plain green. Which kind of seems right, but then...
My cell phone sings out.
Hey, kid, I need your help.
It's Tim.
I'm at headquarters, and I left my laptop at the store. I wrote this speech intro thing for your ma to use tonight. I need you to forward the copy to her email. It's in the supply room, on Mr. Garrett's desk.
I locate the laptop easily. Okay, what now?
Just go on in. I can't remember what it's called. There aren't that many files. Work or something like that.
What's your password? My fingers hover over the keyboard.
Alice, Tim says. But I will deny that if you tell anyone.
In Wonderland, right?
Absolutely. Gotta go. That tight-ass Malcolm dude is having a fit about something. Call me back if you can't find it.
I enter the password and look for documents. There's nothing labeled work. I scroll through, searching, and finally come upon a folder labeled crap. Close enough, knowing Tim. I click on that and up pops a series of documents. Give that girl an A, a study of Hawthorne's Hester Prynne, a comparison of Huckleberry Finn and Holden Caulfield, Danger in Dickens, The Four Freedoms. I click on The Four Freedoms, and there it all is. Nan's prize-winning 4th of July speech, dated last fall. But she wrote it for American government. This spring. Daniel took American government last year. I remember him going on and on about John Adams at our lunch table. So Nan must have gotten the syllabus from him. She's always prepared like that. But still... Writing the paper before the class even started? Extreme. Even for Nan. And why would it be on Tim's computer? Okay, Nan did borrow his laptop a lot when hers was a mess. I shift the mouse, edging it to Holden Caulfield and Huckleberry Finn, Nan's essay to be published in the literary journal. Here it is, the Laszlo-winning essay, word for word.
I know she covered for him. We both have, let's face it. But this is so much further than I thought she'd go. I can't believe it. Tim's been using Nan's work. I continue to stare at the screen, feeling like someone siphoned all the blood out of my head.
Samantha, I need you. Can you unvelcro yourself from the boyfriend for a while?
Nan's voice crackles over my cell, high and shaking.
Of course, where are you?
Meet me at Doan's. I need ice cream. Nan's going for sugar rush therapy again. Bad sign. Did she go to New York with Daniel? It's only Saturday. I thought Tim said she'd told her parents he was taking her to some model UN, and they were staying at his very strict uncle's house. I don't even know if Daniel has an uncle who lives in NYC, although if he did, that the uncle would be strict is a safe bet. The Mason's house is much closer to town than mine, so I'm not surprised to find her sitting at the counter at Doan's when I get there. I am surprised to find her already plowing into a banana split.
Sorry, she says through a mouthful of whipped cream. Couldn't wait. I almost jumped the counter and dug into the buckets with my fingers. I definitely need some chocolate malt salvation now. Just like Tim. Since he stopped drinking, he's like a maniac with the sweet stuff.
But you're not kicking a habit, I say. Or are you? What's up with Daniel? She turns bright red, and tears come to her eyes, spill down her flushed, freckled cheeks.
Oh, Nan.
I start to put my arms around her, but she shakes her head.
Order yours, and let's sit at the picnic table outside. I don't want everyone in Doan's to hear this.
The only other people in Doan's at the moment are a mother with a toddler who is screaming because she won't let him buy a foot-long Tootsie Roll.
Bad mommy, I'm going to kill you with a sword.
Yeah, we'd better get out of here before we're material witnesses to a homicide, I say. I'll get ice cream later. Lead the way. She sets her bowl in front of her on the table, scoops up the cherry, and dunks it in a pool of chocolate sauce.
This is how many million calories, you think?
Nan, tell me. What happened? Tim said you were spending the whole weekend.
I'm sorry I didn't tell you.
Daniel didn't want anyone to know. I only told Tim the truth because I thought he could help me come up with a better cover story. But he said the model UN and the strict uncle were inspired. Although he said it would have been even better if I'd said we were staying with his aunt at a convent.
You could have told me. I would never tell on you.
Does she know about Tim stealing her essays? Should I tell her? Her eyes fill again, and she dashes the tears away impatiently, taking another mountainous scoop of ice cream.
I know, I'm sorry. I felt like you were too busy with the hometown hottie to care. I thought I'd just go and come back a sophisticated woman who took her relationship to the next level in the Big Apple.
I wince. There's no way I'm bringing up Tim right now. Did Daniel use that phrase again? Maybe if we made him a little dictionary, we could translate his words into something remotely sexy. Take our relationship to the next level could be, come on, baby, light my fire. She gulps another scoop of ice cream, swallows, then says, what would it's time to push our comfort zone be?
Oh, Nan, really?
She nods.
He can't really be our age. Maybe it's like Freaky Friday and some middle-aged insurance salesman has taken over Daniel's body.
She scoops up another enormous spoonful.
What comes after pushing the comfort zone, Nan? I probe.
Well, we were at his uncle's townhouse. That part was true. But his uncle was away in Pound Ridge for the weekend. So we'd had dinner and walked in the park, not for very long because Daniel kept thinking someone was going to mug us. Then we walked back and he put on music.
Please tell me it wasn't Ravel's Bolero.
Actually, he couldn't get the station he wanted, so we wound up with all these rap songs. But he thought that was sort of funny, too. I noticed that he got less starchy when we... Well, when I got more, confident.
Right. I kind of knew that was Daniel's kryptonite, so I was wearing my green dress with all the little buttons down the front, and I just ripped it open. Buttons everywhere. You should have seen his face.
Wow. I can't imagine Nan doing this.
She still changes in her closet when I spend the night. Then I said, "Stop talking, Professor," and I ripped open his shirt. She's smiling a little now. "Nan, you shameless hussy." The smile fades away, and she puts her head down on the table next to her melting sundae and sobs. "I'm sorry, I was kidding. What then? He didn't make you go right out to Madison Avenue and buy him a new one, did he?" "No, he was totally into it. He told me this was a new side of me, and he wasn't threatened by confident women." She digs out a chunk of banana dribbling with syrup, but then drops the spoon back down and blows her nose on the hem of her T-shirt. "That I was beautiful, and there was nothing better than brains and beauty together. And then he stopped talking and started kissing me like crazy. We were lying on the floor in front of the fireplace, and..." Another sob. My hand is stroking the back of Nan's head, my mind racing with every possible scenario. Daniel announced he's gay. Daniel has erectile dysfunction. Daniel confessed to being a vampire and not being able to have sex with her because he might kill her. His uncle came in, right into the library. He wasn't even away. That was supposed to be next weekend. He'd been at work when we dropped off our suitcases, and now he was upstairs taking a bath, and he heard noises, and he came in with a cane ready to kill us. Oh, poor Nanny. He's shouting at Daniel and calling me a slut and all this stuff. And Daniel can't find his pants, so he's just standing there naked. And then he shoves me in front of himself. Damn, Daniel. Couldn't he even be gallant and shield her? Tim was right. He's a putz. What a coward. Oops, will that make Nan mad? I brace myself. But she just nods her head and says, "I know, right? Steve McQueen would never have done that. He would have beaten him up like he does to the bad doctor in Love with a Proper Stranger." So then what? So then the uncle and Daniel start fighting. Daniel's begging him not to tell his parents, and his uncle keeps screaming at him. Finally, he agreed not to tell if we left the premises at once. I can see where Daniel gets his diction. So you came home then? No. It was really late. We used my emergency American Express card to stay at the Doubletree Midtown. Daniel tried to pick up where we left off, but the mood was gone. We just watched a Star Trek marathon and fell asleep. I reach out my arms, and this time she slides into them, her drooping head on my shoulder, her own shoulder shaking. Why can't things ever work for me? I just wanted to be irresistible and adventurous. Now I'm a Scarlet Woman, and I didn't even get the sex. I'm a faux Scarlet Woman. Her hot tears soak my collarbone. I think you were awesome. Ripping off his shirt? Taking charge? You're a Scarlet Woman in all the best ways, Nan Mason. It was really hard to rip off, actually. She wipes her eyes with the back of her hand. Brooks Brothers must sew those buttons on with wire. He said you were beautiful and brave, I tell her, and you were. Don't tell anybody what happened. I didn't even tell Tim. I told him Daniel rocked my world. Ugh. Seems to me Tim would understand things not turning out as planned. I rub her back gently and say, "Pinky swear." She sits up suddenly. No matter what you do, don't tell that Garrett boy. I can't stand the thought of you guys laughing at us. I wince, knowing how protective Jace is of his sisters, how he tried to nudge Tim into having more compassion for Nan. I know he would never laugh. That Nan would think he would hurts, almost as much as it hurts that she thinks I would. But all I say is, I won't tell anybody. I need more ice cream, she says. Her face is so red and swollen that her eyes are squinted. Want to split that Doane's Dynamo thing that has 10 scoops and comes in a frisbee? Chapter 33. Wish me luck at Chuck E. Cheese, Mrs. Garrett sighs as she drops Jace and me off at the hardware store. Hell on earth, with pizza and a giant talking mouse. It's Jace and Tim's shift today, except that Tim didn't show up to give us a ride. Mrs. Garrett, saying she didn't need me to babysit,
because of a birthday party George is invited to at Chuck E. Cheese, drove us. My early afternoon, free from breakfast ahoy, I'm thumbing idly through the SAT test prep guide Nan gave me. Jace begins unpacking a shipment of nails. We say nothing about Tim's absence, but I notice Jace's eyes under their thick, dark lashes flicking to the clock over the door, just as mine do. I don't want Tim to screw up. But 10 minutes go by, then 20, then half an hour. Mr. Garrett comes out of the back room to say hello. He claps Jace on the back and kisses me on the cheek, telling us there's plenty of coffee in his office. He's holed up back there, he says, doing the quarterly books. Jace whistles under his breath, sorting nails, scribbling amounts down on a pad. I hear a little repetitive sound coming from Mr. Garrett's office. I flip pages in the prep guide, trying to identify the sound. Click, 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 click. I look over at Jace inquiringly.
Pen cap, he explains. My dad says clicking it always helps him add, or in our case, subtract.
He opens a bag of bullet head nails, letting them clatter into the clear plastic drawer in front of him. No better, the finances? I come up to stretch my arms around his back, resting my cheek against his shoulder blade. He's wearing a gray sweatshirt today, and I inhale the Jace smell.
But no worse, he responds with a grin, turning to face me, cupping the heel of his hand to the back of my neck, smiling as he pulls me closer.
You look beat. I trace the dark bluish shadow under his eye with a slow finger.
Yep, I am. That feels good, Sam.
Are you burning the midnight oil? Doing what?
I guess I'm burning the daylight oil, but it sure doesn't feel like daylight at 4 in the morning.
His eyes are still shut. I smooth my finger down his cheek, then slide it back up to the other eye. You're getting up at 4 in the morning? Why?
Don't laugh.
Why does that phrase always bring out a smile? He opens his eyes and grins back at me. I school my face into a somber expression. I won't.
I'm a paperboy now.
What?
I'm delivering papers for the Stony Bay Sentinel, starting at 4, 6 days a week.
How long have you been doing this?
2 weeks. I didn't think it would be quite this bad. You never see paperboys in movies chugging down Red Bull and no-dos.
Probably because they're usually 10. Couldn't Duff do it? His hand slides up to tangle in my hair, to pull out my elastic, because that's what he always does.
Duff doesn't hope to go to college next year. I do, even though it's damn unlikely the way things are going. Hell, I shouldn't have bought that car. I just wanted it so badly. And it's nearly running now, with more money poured in, that is.
I bite my lip. I never have to worry about money.
Don't look so sad, Sam. It'll be okay. I shouldn't have brought it up.
I brought it up, I remind him. I'm your girlfriend. You're supposed to be able to talk about this stuff with me. It's not just about me making free with your hot body, you know.
Though that completely works for me,
Jace says, twisting his fingers in my hair and pulling me closer.
Oh, hell. Not more of this PDA crap.
We turn toward the door as Tim stalks in, wearing his gray Impress Grace Reed suit, and looking crumpled and extremely pissed off.
Mason,
Jace greets, not letting go of me.
You okay?
He indicates the clock with a hitch of his shoulder.
That would depend on what okay is.
Tim yanks off his jacket and shoves it onto a coat hook. He untwines his tie as though it's a boa constrictor with a chokehold around his neck.
Which I wouldn't frickin' know, would I?
Stalking over, he takes his place beside Jace, who surreptitiously checks his pupils and sniffs his breath. I can't smell anything. I hope Jace doesn't. Tim doesn't look high, just furious.
What's up?
Jace hands him his time card. Tim bends over to scribble the time in black marker.
Samantha, how the fuck much do you know about Clay Tucker?
Tim, come on, stop swearing. I put a hand on his arm. He's been easing up on the four-letter words lately, sometimes getting through an entire conversation without one.
Why, Samantha? Why the fuck should I?
He gives me his fake, charming smile.
I get to say it. You guys get to do it. The way I figure it, you come out ahead.
Knock it off, Tim. This isn't Samantha's fault. What's going on with Clay Tucker?
Jace leans his hip against the side of the counter, crossing his arms.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not one to criticize manipulative bastards, being one myself and all. But this guy? New levels. And your mom, Samantha, right there with him.
Tim rubs his forehead. What do you mean? I say, at the same time Mr. Garrett asks.
You going back there to work tonight?
He must have come into the room without any of us hearing. Tim shakes his head, but a flush climbs up his neck. He's never been late before, not here.
Good, then. You'll stay on after closing and finish that inventory of the stockroom you started the other day.
Tim nods, swallowing. Mr. Garrett puts a hand on his shoulder.
Never again, Timothy. You hear?
He walks off down the hall to his office, his broad shoulders looking a little slumped. Jace pulls a packet of Trident gum out of his jeans pocket and offers it to Tim.
So, go on. So, old Clay.
Tim takes 6 sticks of gum, half the package. Jace raises his eyebrows but says nothing.
He's freaking everywhere. You lift a rock in this campaign and he crawls out from under it. Grace has this entire staff, and Clay's in charge of fucking all of it. He says something and everybody jumps, even me. The guy never sleeps. Even that little dude, your mom's suck-up campaign manager, Malcolm, is looking bushed. But Clay's going along like the friggin' Energizer Bunny of Connecticut politics. He's even got this babe, this hot brunette from Ben Christopher's office, being like a double agent for him. She shows up every morning to give him the goods on what Christopher's doing, so Grace can get a jump on it, show it up, look better.
Realization smacks me hard, but I barely have time to process, because Tim keeps going.
He's all about the photo ops, too. Yesterday it was some poor bastard who lost both legs in Afghanistan coming stateside. Clay was on the spot making sure Gracie got a half-page spread in the Stony Bay Bugle, kissing him hello.
Tim jams his hands into his pockets, pacing around the room as he talks.
Then we go to some daycare center where he gets Grace's photo taken with 6 cute blonde kids piled around her. He practically shoved this girl with one of those big red birthmarks on her face out of the way. I mean, he's good at what he does. It's amazing watching him work, but somehow freaking scary, too. And your mom? She just says nothing, Samantha. She snaps to attention like she's working for him. What the fuck's up with that?
It's not as though I haven't thought all these things, but when Tim says them, I feel defensive. Besides, who is Tim to talk? Look, I say, it may seem like he's the boss, but Mom would never back off completely like that. She loves this job, and she's totally committed to winning, and this is a tough race. I trail off. I sound like her.
Yeah, and she's ahead in all our internal polling, even with the margin of error. Close, but ahead. But of course, that's not enough for Clay. Clay has to hedge his bets. Clay has to have his little November surprise in the works, so he makes abso-friggin-lutely sure that not only does she win, but her opponent fucking loses. Big. Not just the race. His whole career.
Jace is absently sliding the palm of his left hand up and down my side while still pulling plastic packs of nails out of the cardboard box.
And he's doing this by digging up dirt that doesn't matter, making sure it matters and sticks.
We both stare at Tim.
Ben Christopher, who's running against Grace, he has 2 DUIs, he says. The first was from 30 years ago, high school. The second was 26 years ago. He did his service, paid his fines. I see the dude in meetings. He's seriously decent. He's done everything he can to make up for it. But old Clay's already got it lined up to make sure you can never keep your past in the past. He knows from his little pet spy that the Christopher campaign is shitting bricks about it coming out. And he's gonna have old Gracie do a rally with some asshole there who's going to let it all slip. 3 days before the election. Where are you in all this? Jace asks.
Tim looks at us pleadingly.
I don't know. Clay Tucker thinks I walk on water. For some reason, every damn thing I do impresses this jerk off. Today he complimented me on how I collated papers, for Christ's sake. No one has ever been this impressed with me. Not even when I was faking my ass off.
I'm not now. I'm actually good at this crap. Plus, I need the recommendation.
His voice rises a few octaves.
The hardware store is all very well, Timothy, but it's your campaign experience and what the state senator says about you that'll go a long way toward repairing the damage you've done to yourself.
Your mom? I ask.
Natch, there's not a person on the planet who would say as many nice things about me as Clay Tucker. And of course, my luck, he has to ruin a good man along the way.
At this point, the store gets a sudden run of customers. A hassled-looking woman with her teenage daughter chooses paint chips. An elderly woman wants a leaf blower that doesn't take any muscle to run. A clueless-looking bearded guy tells Tim he wants one of those things you fix stuff with, like on TV. After 5 minutes of Tim offering him everything from spackle to a dustbuster to a Ginzu knife, Jace finally figures out it's a toolkit. The guy trots off looking satisfied.
So what are you going to do? I ask. Hell, 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 Tim responds, reaching for his shirt pocket where his cigarettes still reside, then letting his hand drop away empty.
No smoking in the building. He closes his eyes, looking as though someone's pounding a nail through his temple, then opens them and looks no better. He smacks his fist against the counter, sending a plastic container of pens jumping.
I just can't make myself quit. I've screwed up so much already. This will look like more of the same, even though it's not.
He bends forward over the cash register, digging the heels of his hands into his eyes. Is he crying?
You could tell him what you think of his tactics, Jace points out. Tell him they're wrong. Like he'll care. I hate this. I hate knowing the right thing to do and not having the balls to do it. This sucks. This is like payback, isn't it? You wouldn't believe the things I've done, the tests I've cheated on, the rules I've broken, the times I've fucked up, the people I've screwed over. Oh, knock it off already, man, with the nobody knows the horrors I've seen routine. It's getting really old.
Jace snaps. I take a deep breath like I'm going to say something. What, I have no idea, but he continues before I can.
It's not like you murdered newborns and drank their blood. You screwed up at prep school. Don't overrate yourself.
Tim's eyebrows have shot to his hairline. Neither Tim nor I have ever seen Jace lose his temper.
It's not the moral dilemma of the century.
Jace runs his fingers through his hair.
It's not whether to develop the atom bomb. It's just whether you're going to do a decent thing or keep doing shitty things. So choose. Just stop whining about it.
Tim gives a little nod, an upward jerk of his chin, then turns his attention to the register, as though the numbers and symbols on it are the most fascinating things he's ever seen. His face has been so much more expressive lately than usual. But now he's assumed that blank mask that I had come to think of as his real face.
I should go to the stockroom,
he mutters, and heads down the hallway. Jace pours the last plastic bag full of nails into the plastic container. The clatter breaks the silence. That didn't sound like you, I offer quietly, still standing beside him. Jace looks embarrassed.
Just kind of came out. It makes me feel... I get tired of.
His hand rubs the back of his neck, then slides all the way across his face to cover his eyes.
I liked him. He's a good guy.
He pulls his hand down to smile at me.
But I can't say I wouldn't appreciate a crack at all those choices, chances Tim had. And when he acts like he's under this curse or something.
He shakes his head as though brushing the thought off, turns and looks at me, then nods at the clock.
I told Dad I'd stay late tonight and make out some reorder forms.
He reaches for a few strands of my hair, twining them around his finger.
You busy later?
I was supposed to go to a meet and greet in Fairport with Mom, but I told her I needed to study for SATs.
She believed this? It's summer, Sam.
Nan's got me signed up for this crazy prep simulation, and I might have told Mom when she was a little distracted.
But not intentionally, of course.
Of course not, I say.
So if I were to come see you after 8, you'd be studying?
Absolutely. But I might want a study buddy, because I might be grappling with some really tough problems.
Grappling, huh?
tussling with, I say. Wrestling. Handling.
Gotcha. Sounds like I should bring protective gear to study with you.
Jace grins at me. You're pretty tough. You'll be fine.
Chapter 34. I've just gotten in the door when my cell phone starts up.
So because we have to get such an early start in the morning, the factory opens at 5, can you imagine? Really makes more sense. See you when you get back from school.
My cell gets perfect reception, but the tinny voice spilling out of it seems to come and go, as though I'm having problems tuning in to a certain radio frequency. Because this voice, saying she'll be gone all night, because she has an early morning meet and greet at a factory way up in the western corner of the state. This just can't be Station Grace Reed. I must have tuned in to an alternative program, or universe. But she concludes,
"We're halfway there already, and it doesn't make sense to drive all the way home. Clay's found us a gorgeous hotel room. You'll be fine, right?"
I'm so taken aback that I nod before remembering she can't see me.
"No problem, Mom. I'll be fine. Enjoy the hotel."
I almost add that she could stay another night if she wanted, before deciding that might sound suspiciously overeager. She'll be gone. All night. With Clay and his confusing agenda in a gorgeous hotel room. But I won't think about that. What I do think about, what I immediately think about, is the all-night part. Which is why I'm hitting Jace's number on my cell instantly.
Sam.
I can hear the smile in his voice. I just left the store 10 minutes ago.
You having a study crisis already?
My mom won't be home tonight. At all. There's a pause during which I feel flustered. Do I have to spell things out more? How do I even do that? Want to have a sleepover? We're not 6.
Your mom won't be home at all?
He repeats. That's right.
So maybe you'd like company, since you're grappling with all those study problems.
That's what I'd like.
Door or window?
He asks. I'm unlocking the window right now. I pull my hair out of its braid, brush it loose. I've really got to cut it one of these days. It's down to the small of my back now. Takes forever to dry after a swim. Why am I even thinking about this now? I guess I'm a little nervous. I didn't want to overthink, but unless we just pounce on each other in the heat of the moment, hard to do logistically speaking, there has to be a little planning, a little time for overthinking. I hear a tapping and go over to the window to fit my hand against Jace's before I nudge the glass open. He's brought a sleeping bag, one of those big green bulky L.L. Bean ones. I look at it questioningly. Following my gaze, he turns red.
I told my parents I was going to help you study. Then we might watch a movie, and if it got late enough, I'd crash on your living room floor.
And they said?
Mom said, "Have a nice time, dear." Dad just looked at me.
Embarrassing much?
Worth it.
He walks slowly over, his eyes locked on mine, then puts his hands around my waist. So are we going to study? My tone's deliberately casual. Jace slides his thumbs behind my ears, rubbing the hollow at their base. He's only inches from my face, still looking into my eyes.
You bet. I'm studying you.
He scans over me slowly, then returns to my eyes.
You have little flecks of gold in the middle of the blue.
He bends forward and touches his lips to one eyelid, then the other, then moves back.
And your eyelashes aren't blonde at all. They're brown.
And he steps back a little, smiling slowly at me.
You're already blushing, here.
His lips touch the pulse at the hollow of my throat.
And probably here.
The thumb that brushes against my breast feels warm, even through my t-shirt. In the movies, clothes just melt away when the couple is ready to make love. They're all golden and backlit, with the soundtrack soaring. In real life, it just isn't like that. Jace has to take off his shirt and fumbles with his belt buckle, and I hop around the room pulling off my socks, wondering just how unsexy that is. People in movies don't even have socks. When Jace pulls off his jeans, change he has in his pocket slips out and clatters and rolls across the floor.
"Sorry," he says, and we both freeze, even though no one's home to hear the sound.
In movies, no one ever gets self-conscious at this point, thinking they should have brushed their teeth. In movies, it's all beautifully choreographed, set to an increasingly dramatic soundtrack. In movies, when the boy pulls the girl to him when they are both finally undressed, they never bump their teeth together and get embarrassed and have to laugh and try again. But here's the truth. In movies, it's never half so lovely as it is here and now with Jace. I take a deep breath as his hand skims down, down to the back of my thigh. The feeling of his skin, all his skin against mine, gives me goosebumps. Then he pulls me closer, and we plunge into a kiss that is like deep, deep water. When we finally stop for air, I wrap both legs around his hips. The corners of his eyes crinkle. His hands tighten on my bottom as he walks over to the bed. I slide off and am lying on my side, looking up at him. Jace bends down, crouching beside the bed, and stretches out his hand to put it on my heart. I do the same, feel his heart pounding, fast, fast.
"Are you nervous?" I whisper. "You don't seem it."
"I'm worried it'll hurt for you at first, but I'm thinking it's not fair that it's like that."
"It's okay. I'm not worried about that. Come closer."
Jace straightens up slowly, then goes over to his jeans to pull out one of the condoms we bought together. He holds his palm out flat.
"Not nervous at all."
He ducks his head to indicate his fingers, which are trembling slightly.
"What's that one called?" I ask.
"I don't even know. I just grabbed a bunch before I came over." We lean over the little square of foil. "Ramses."
"What's with these names?"
I inquire, as Jace gently begins to open the packet.
"I mean, were the Egyptians known for their effective birth control or what? And why Trojans? Aren't they mostly remembered as the guys who lost? You'd think they'd use Macedonians. Weren't they the winners? I mean, I know it doesn't sound as manly, but..."
Jace puts two fingers on my lips.
"Samantha, it's okay. Shh, we don't have to. We can just..."
"But I want to," I whisper. "I want to." I take a deep breath and reach out for the condom.
"Do you want me to help, put it on?"
Jace blushes.
"Yeah, okay."
When we're both lying on the bed, entirely naked, for the first time, just looking at him in the moonlight makes my throat ache.
"Wow," I say.
"I think that's my line," Jace whispers back. He puts his hand against my cheek and looks at me intently. My hand moves to cover his, and I nod. Then his body is moving over me, and mine is opening to welcome him.
"Okay. It does, after all, hurt a bit.
I thought it might not, just because it's Jace. There's pain, but not wrenching or stabbing. More like a sting as something gives way, then aches a little as he fills me. I bite down hard on my lower lip, opening my eyes to find Jace biting his, looking at me so anxiously that something in my heart yields even more completely.
"You okay? This okay?"
I nod, pulling his hips more tightly to my own.
"Now we'll make it better,"
Jace vows, and begins to kiss me again as he starts to move in a rhythm. My body follows, unwilling to let him go, already glad to have him come back. Chapter 35. As you might imagine, I'm useless at breakfast ahoy the next day. Thank God I'm not lifeguarding. If I can't remember how some people who come in every single day like their eggs, if I stare aimlessly at the coffee maker, unable to stop smiling, at least no one's life is threatened. When Jace climbed out my window at 4 this morning, he got halfway down the trellis, then came back up.
"Stop by the store after work,"
he whispered, after one last kiss. So that's where I head the minute I clock out, fast enough that I'm almost running. When I get to Main Street, I try to slow down, but can't. I fling the store door open, forgetting that the hinge